It's kind of wild how easy it is to feel disconnected from where our food comes from these days. We grab something off the shelf, toss it in the cart, and that's that. But every now and then, you come across something that reminds you, hey, real people grew this. Here's something real for you. 90% of American-grown frozen red raspberries, they come from a tight-knit community of farmers in Washington State. These are multi-generational family farmers, folks who've been working the land for decades, taking real pride in every berry they grow. This isn't just farming, it's legacy. It's local and it's done with heart. These frozen Washington red raspberries are honestly juicy, delicious, and full of flavor because they're grown in nutrient-rich soil and frozen right at peak ripeness. It feels good to enjoy something that's not only high quality, but also backed by care, tradition, and purpose. These berries, they're not just tossed in a freezer. They're grown with intention by people who've dedicated their lives to perfecting them. From sustainable farming to state-of-the-art freezing techniques, everything is done to lock in flavor and nutrition. Whether you're cooking, baking, smoothie making, or eating straight from the bag, frozen Washington red raspberries give you the real taste of American farming. And yeah, you can tell the difference.
Go to redras.org and look for Product of the U.S. to learn more.
Delicious, meat nutritious. Crack into a good source of protein with tasty, healthy, Wonderful Pistachios. Wonderful Pistachios is a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids. In fact, each 1-ounce serving of Wonderful Pistachios contains 6 grams of protein. Pistachios have got to be the tastiest nut. Pistachios are delicious, they pack a nutritional punch, and are oddly fun to eat. It's like a little dopamine drop every time you hear that shell crack open. Personally, I like them roasted and salted, but you can find your favorite shell or no shell variety at wonderfulpistachios.com. Whether you're running between meetings or dropping off the kids, Wonderful Pistachios are the snack that works as hard as you do. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about this healthy, tasty snack.
I don't think it's from one life form to another. I think we stick in our same life form, but I don't see people like you're a human this lifetime and a rock the next lifetime and a deer the life after that. Like, I think we stay in the same track. But I do see people's past lives all the time and have my whole life. So to me, it seems, I know not everybody believes in the idea of reincarnation, but I certainly do. And I do because of my own experiences of, when we have been, like, I like to travel and I've been to places where I'm like, I know I've been here before, but I've never been here before.
Lisa Campion, thank you for joining me on the Mindful Movement Podcast.
So glad to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
It's good to see you again. You are a Reiki master and a psychic counselor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you were great. I'm very grateful that you were generous enough to offer some of your psychic counseling services to me a few weeks back. And that was the first time in my life I experienced anything like that. I really enjoyed it, got a lot out of it. So I appreciate you making that offer.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, it was a great idea to do a session together before we had this podcast. So, you just can experience what it's like and we have something cool to talk about.
Yeah, it's useful to have a reference there because in my mind, what I thought of psychic growing up was very different than what that session was about. So I really didn't know, I didn't really have a framework in my mind. I pictured almost a cartoonish style of someone predicting the future, that's not.
I know. I think we all have sort of like the psychic hotline or, the gypsy with the crystal ball kind of, you're going to meet a tall, dark stranger. There's a lot of myths and misconceptions about psychics, or we get our idea about psychics from watching horror movies, paranormal movies. And, that never ends well for the poor psychic. So it's always... the psychic is a scammer or the psychic is, some tortured soul. And really the truth, is every psychic works in a really different way. So what you experience with me might be really different than if you worked with a bunch of other psychics. And, it's so much more normal, natural than we think it is. It's just everyone's psychic. Everyone's psychic. Because psychic ability is really like athletic ability or musical ability. Like everyone's got some. And whether we work it or not, it's like if the professional psychics are just like professional musicians, professional athletes. They've honed their craft. They've practiced. They studied. They worked it. So they have skill that, I guess you have to have some natural skill, and everyone really does, but could we say everyone could become a professional athlete, a professional musician? Sure, if you put everything into it and you felt a calling for it, you could, right?
Right. What's the difference between intuition and psychic ability?
It's such a great question. So for me, and this is just my own semantics, like how I define it, is that intuition is like our inner knowing, our self-knowing. Like, and we experience that when you meet somebody for the first time and you get like a really like strong impression about that person, or you have that little nudge like, I knew that was going to happen, or I have a good or bad feeling about something, you know, where we feel things in our body. It's usually how we feel in our body, what we know, not with the brain, but with the gut. So the gut knowing and the feeling, those things make up our intuition. And it's kind of like a inner GPS, like an inner guidance system that's kind of pointing you in the right direction. Like sometimes it really goes against our mind. Your mind can be like, let's say you meet somebody and your gut is like, no, that person, there's something wrong there. And your mind's like, what do you mean? That person's perfectly nice. Everybody else likes that person. Like, don't be a jerk. Like, come, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Like, and your gut's like, no. And we know what happens, right? Eventually, time goes by and your gut's right. I mean, almost always, you know? So that's what I think of as intuition. It's information, our inner wisdom, our inner knowing. If you're more a metaphysician, we say it comes from our higher self, right? And psychic is when we get information from outside ourselves. That's like, we all have a team of spirit guides. We all have like our dead granny and our angels and the ascended masters and, you know, whole team of spirit beings. It's really hard to be a human on the planet, and we wouldn't come down here without some help. And that's like our team of advisors. And so psychic more comes from them, the outside of ourself. That, and we often experience that when we see signs and omens. Maybe you see, you know, 444 on the clock every time you look, or you see repeating numbers, or you think about your grandpa and then that song comes on the radio out of the blue. Like, you know, where maybe you have dreams. It's sort of more precognition or experiences of spirits from the other side. That's more of a psychic experience.
I feel like I grew up with a lot of that, a lot tied to my aunt who died too young. And I was named after her.
Ooh,
so
cool.
It's funny. It's not funny. I mean, she was born on the 26th and died on the 26th. And she was 26 years old.
Wow.
And then I was born on the 26th, the year later that year.
Wow.
And her mother, my grandmother, or my bubby, wanted to name me after her. Her name was Lois. They named me Leslie. But that number, those numbers, like, there's just no doubt in my mind. Like, it's not a coincidence. And they showed up, and like, things showed up growing up that it almost became like, not a running joke, but like, you see what she did there kind of thing, mm-hmm. in the family when like something crazy happened. It was always around like, not always, but there were oftentimes around like big events, big family events where something really bizarre would happen. Like a picture of hers would slide down the wall after being there forever, really. And then not even breaking or falling over, just like stay leaning up at the bottom, like things that people couldn't explain. And then when I went, I always felt like, it's funny you say spirit guide, like we couldn't be down here without help. Cause I always felt like she was there watching over me to help me know that like I'm on the right track.
Yeah.
Like I'd go to college and, you know, I was born on 7/26 and like those were my numbers that I always like thought of her when I would see those. And I can't tell you how many times I look at the clock and it's 7/26. Mm-hmm. But it like I wind up getting an apartment. It turned out I lived on Lois Lane, which was her name, that was right off Route 7/26. And it just, every time I would pull into my apartment, I would be like reminded, like, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. Like,
yeah,
she's
so beautiful.
Taking it. Yeah. And maybe, I don't know. And like, I don't know how much of it is just like a coincidence thing, But like to me, it was very real. And it was like real within my family. And there were some, and you know, she had a big impact. Dying as young as she did and being sick, like it impacted a lot of people in a really powerful way. And there, it was almost like there was like a bond within the family that was there in relationship to like her memory and the knowing of her existence and like that role she was playing by like keeping her presence with everybody in the family. Mm-hmm. Like my grandparents and my parents were split up, but in both houses, my father's place, my mother's place, and interacting with my sisters. And it was always very interesting. So it's funny that you say spirit, like a spirit guide. Is that what you're referencing to? Like just people that have lived in a previous time that their energetics are still around? Like energy doesn't really ever be created or disappear, just kind of transforms form?
Yeah. Exactly right. And sort of like, you know, going from a liquid to a gas or a solid to a liquid, it's like we change states. We're no longer physical in the physical world, right? Like we are now, kind of this flesh and bone and blood. But our essence continues on, you know, afterwards. And then, you know, like we talk about heaven. I never called it heaven when I was a kid. I called it soul world because I was kind of a non-denominational. Like heaven was a little too, I don't know, religious for me. And so I called it soul world, and that we go to this place when we're not here in a physical body, you know. And our spirit guides can also be other beings. Like angels are not human. It's not like you die and become an angel. An angel is a totally different being. And they're sort of like the shepherds of humanity. Like they sort of watch over us and help. They're here to help us with our spiritual evolution, you know. So we can have spirit guides or ascended masters. Ascended masters are people who reached enlightenment and don't come back on the planet anymore, like Jesus, Mother Mary, Buddha, you know, Krishna, like all the people, Lao Tzu, like the people who were great philosophers and great minds and great spiritual leaders who have completed their incarnational cycle on the planet, but still come back to help the rest of us because it's hard to be human.
Interesting. It is hard.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of suffering in the process.
Yeah.
So you said you called it soul world as a kid. What age were you when you said, when you figured out you could tap into something or something?
I was literally born this way. So my very first memories, and of course I grew up in a really haunted house. It's like Murphy's Law, put the psychic child in the haunted house. I'm in the haunted room. So my first memories were like people standing around my bed. I used to call them the gray people. And I'd wake up and they'd be sitting in the end of my bed. And I was never really, they were kind of transparent, wispy. And I'd tell my parents about it and they'd be like, oh, you have such a good imagination, you know.
Like you would visually see them, Lisa, or there was like a felt experience or
presence? I'm a visual psychic. So I would see them and sometimes I would see them with my actual eyes, like I see you right now, you know. But a lot of times it's more with my, now that I'm an adult, I don't really like that very much. So now as an adult, I see things with my inner eye. It's like watching a movie inside my head or seeing two layers of reality at the same time. So there's this solid layer and then there's kind of like transposed over that another visual thing that I can see. But when it's more with my inner eye, my mind's eye, you know, it's like watching a little movie inside my head. And that I also hear, feel, sense, know, like we have a lot of different psychic senses and I get information through all of those channels. Whoa. And I feel like that happened to me because I had a twin brother that died in utero. So you know how twinsies are connected, like psychically, like twins or have a psychic connection. He died somewhere along the way inside. And so my psychic connection with him continued. Then I was born, he wasn't. And I think that's why I was born psychic. He was my imaginary friend when I was little. So when I was like 4 or 5, I was talking to him out loud. And my mom came in the room. She's like, Lisa, who are you talking to? And I'm like, I said, I'm talking to my dead brother, William. And my mother, she like had this glass, like dropped the glass shattered everywhere. And she like ran screaming from the room like, ah! You know, like what? is that. And I just, you know, he was like my playmate when I was a little kid. So to me, it never seemed weird. Like the concept of death, in a weird way, I experienced death before I experienced life, you know? So death was just seemed like a sort of temporary thing for me, or it didn't really freak me out. The great people didn't scare me. They were sad. Like I felt sorry for them. But I've never really been that scared of spirits. People, on the other hand, scare me on a regular basis. Living people.
What did your parents think about what you were telling them at the time?
You know, God bless my parents. They were hippies. So I was born in the 60s and just outside of Boston. And they were kind of liberal hippie types. And they didn't know what to do. I'm lucky because a lot of people, I didn't get dragged to the church and have holy water thrown on me like happens to a lot of people. They didn't put me in a mental hospital. That happened to a lot of people back then. They were like, oh, you just have a lot of imagination, you know? So they didn't know what to do. They didn't squash it, but they also were like, well, she's super creative, or, you know, they didn't really believe it either. But they were spiritual seekers. So they took me, this is so funny, they took me to transcendental meditation when I was 10, because that's what you did when you were a hippie in 1974. And so I met Maharishi Yogi, learned how to meditate, you know, and then we did this thing called the Silva Method. Now it's called the Silva Method. Back then it was called Silva Mind Control. So good. I learned more meditation. This is the first time I heard people talk about spirit guides. You know, it's a lot of really great training for a psychic. So it was hard in a lot of ways. Like I knew growing up was hard. I didn't know what to do. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what the heck was going on. There were no books in the library. This is 60s, 70s, and 80s. There's no internet. There's no books. There's no podcasts. There's nothing. It's like an information zero, you know? So I had a early kind of love of horror movies. I went to see the movie Poltergeist. I think I was 12. And there was a psychic, and she was a pro. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do that. That's when I decided I was going to be a pro psychic. And she said this little thing about like what happens when you die and why some people get stuck and what you do about it. And I was like, oh my God, somebody knows something. And it sparked sort of a lifelong love of paranormal horror movies. I got a kind of wacky education by watching paranormal. Most of it was not accurate. Some of it was helpful.
Well, I wonder if some of the creators or directors of those movies were in that business because they had tapped into something personally that inspired them to like express through art.
I think it happens a lot.
Feeling.
People that have mystical experiences, people that are very haunted as children. And actually I work with a lot of people that have pretty serious PTSD around their childhood experiences. It's a big reason people become paranormal investigators is that they had horrifying experiences themselves as a kid.
So is that like a defense mechanism to help them survive or something? Or is it like a way to just understand the world better?
I think it's a, like, you know, we all cope with our trauma in a different way. And to me, like studying and becoming an expert and trying to help other people is a really like productive and powerful way to try to heal your trauma. That's sort of what I do. Like I, you know, found it quite traumatic in a lot of ways. And so I wrote the books I couldn't find in the library when I was a kid. I became the mentor that I wished I had found. I, you know, teach the classes that I wished were there when I was undergoing a psychic opening. And so many people these days are finding themselves more and more psychic. Like we do kids these days, every generation I think is more and more psychic than the last. And we do a lot of things that really open our psychic ability. So I would say it's yoga, meditation, Reiki. You do those things, your psychic ability is going to pop open. Maybe you do some plant medicine, you go on, you know, on an ayahuasca journey, or you go to Peru and you work with the shamans and you do some psychedelics. These things pop us open very quickly. And a lot of people have really challenging, you know, experiences, especially if they're growing up or living in a culture, part of the world where it's not okay, you know, that these things are the devil or these things are, it's not real, you know? So it's still a challenge. Even it's better than it was when I was going through it, but it can be still challenging for people who are undergoing psychic openings. Right?
So you think collectively as a population on a mass scale, younger generations are becoming more attuned, like more psychic, not just it's more culturally open to talk or explore? Or do you think there's like the species itself is evolving somehow, and this is just another sense that's developing, like, because it's needed? Whereas like some senses might be getting worse because we don't use them collectively. Mm. Like, do you think it's a natural process that's happening? Or do you think it's like it being influenced by cultural pressures or less cultural pressure, really?
I really think it's both. Less is such a great question. You know, I think there's way more people talking about it. You can go on TikTok now and have the TikTok psychics and people talking about their spiritual experiences. And it's become way, way, way more part of the mainstream conversation. It's paranormal TV all over the TV stations, you know, psychics on TV. It's so there is this beautiful opening. And I feel like that's allowed people to talk about it in a way that they haven't been allowed to in the past. And I think we're becoming more psychic, more sensitive, more. And that's part of the natural evolution, you know, the shift in human consciousness, the waking up of humanity that we're going through right now. I just see little kids, they're so psychic, and they always have been, but they're even more so, even more sensitive, I think, than ever.
It's interesting you mention society's opening up about the discussion. I recently heard somebody that was running or working for like the CIA's remote viewing, our government, I guess, has disclosed that our own intelligence agency has had a long-standing viewing program.
Yes. And so does every other government. In fact, the Chinese and the Russians are all way ahead of us.
Is that the same thing? I mean, is it just the same spectrum of stuff? It's just they're focusing on a certain thing, like where you're directing your attention to, like, what is our enemy doing with their submarines? Or like, but is it the same skill set?
It's the same skill set. And it's super fascinating. Remote viewing was developed by the military. And for spying purposes, really, you know, and they developed a program that is so accurate and so easy to lose. They literally take anyone, any old army guy, you know, that doesn't even think this is real and can train them in remote viewing. And they use, they use it for location services, for listening to people's conversations. It's really kind of intense. They use it for threat assessment, risk assessment. You know, they'll put some psychics in a crowd. They do, it's almost like profiling. And the psychics will be like, that person, that person, that person.
Oh,
like,
interesting.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, that is interesting. So you don't just do the sessions like you provide for me. You are actually teaching other people, practitioners.
Yeah.
That skill set.
Yeah, that's really what I like to do now, is sort of help a mentor and teach people that having a psychic opening and need guidance, because it can be really unsettling. Like, if you don't believe this, if you've never happened to you and something goes on and one day you wake up and you got the great people in your room or you're like seeing stuff, you're seeing colors around people, you're like having these psychic that don't fit in your framework of understanding, it's really unsettling. It's really scary. Or you think you're going crazy. Everybody else thinks you're going crazy. And so I love to work with people in that state. I also work with a lot of healers. You know, I always say my mission in life is to train an army of healers to go out there and save the planet. So I've been teaching Reiki for 26 years now. And I work.
26,
I love,
huh? See, I told you.
Yeah. 26. There it is. I only remember it because it's the same age as my daughter, and she just had her 26th birthday. So that's how I know.
But I did a couple of the Reiki programs, like the, you know, the weekend shops where you, I don't know, it was like level one and level two. It was interesting. And I got to say, like, when I was practicing it, I did feel like I was honing the skill for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, it was changing. Like, you were able to,
I don't know, like flex that muscle better.
Just like anything, when we practice it, it gets better.
Yeah.
You know, and if you do Reiki long enough, then good chance your intuition, your psychic ability will pop open. And I wrote in 2018, I published a book called The Art of Psychic Reiki. And that that's kind of the blend, my unique blend. And so I teach something called Psychic Reiki, which is a blend of traditional Reiki training and psychic development.
So why does somebody want to do that? Like, why should somebody that's going through their life, and maybe that, like, whether they're struggling or not, or like they just, they're doing their thing. They go to a job, maybe they like, maybe they don't. They got kids, they're motoring them around, doing all the stuff. Like, what is it? Why should somebody want to do that, any of this?
Such an awesome question. And it really has a lot of practical application. You know, like our intuition is, I think, how our soul speaks to us, how our higher self speaks to us. So first of all, if you want to live a more happy, soulful life, listening to your intuition to help when it's time to make decisions can be really helpful. Like your auntie giving you those heads up that you're in the right place, that you're to pick the right path for your plan, for your soul's plan for you, right? So there's a lot of, like, it's a crazy world out there, right? And, you know, it's getting crazier every minute, it seems like. And I think our intuition is super helpful at helping us navigate through challenging times. You know, like, how do you decide what to do? How do you decide which job to take, which person to date, where to move, which apartment to pick? Like, when we're tuning into our intuitive sense, we can make decisions that, like sometimes when you make decisions with your mind, you have a life that looks good on paper, but doesn't make you happy,
right?
You know, and our intuitive sense is more sometimes contrary to what your logical mind will tell you, but will often lead to a life that's more fulfilling.
I have to apologize. My dogs are howling. You might hear them.
I can't hear them.
So there's probably a truck coming down the driveway. You know, that never happens.
That pesky UPS guy, right?
Yeah, they always behave like it's the first time that they've ever seen that, even though it happens like seemingly three times a day. That is interesting. I mean, me personally, one thing I've done recently where I guess I'm doing this, I guess I'm trying to tap into my own intuition, is around food and exercise. And like little basic lifestyle things and getting out of like being okay, letting go structure and what I'm used to and habits and really trying to listen, like, what does my body need? Like, I have a history of enjoying exercise to the point where I just do too much. Like, it goes well and then I'm like overdoing it. And now I'm having an injury aggravate or my sleep is getting worse because it's like, it's just too much stress. So I'm like, okay, I'm scheduled to do this next, but what did my body really want to do? And I might do like this long, exaggerated warm up and then say, how do I feel? Should I just call it a day right now? What does my body want? And it's helpful. I find that like if I dial it back, like way back, like take 80% off what my plan was, then the next day I feel great and I'm ready to do the full plan. As opposed to just like forcing myself to half-ass and do like, instead of taking 80% off, like doing 80% of what I was planning on to do and then feeling like shit the next day. But really with food, like I get in these habits of what I think I should eat and like I'm on this kind of plan and I'm really like, I guess gullible's a word. Like I'm easily convinced of like this is a good way for you to eat or this is a good supplement for you to take. And it's a blessing and a curse. But lately I've been trying to like pause and listen. I might ask my daughter to like muscle test me with this real quick. And just like, what am I really craving? Not based on what I think, like how can I get my conscious mind out of the way and try to listen to what my body is craving? And I find it to be useful.
Yeah. There's a whole kind of eating called intuitive eating. Like it's a whole like eating style that, you know, it's about doing what you just said, you know? So I think that's a great application. Exercise is a great application. I think on like understanding what's going on in our relationships with people, we often get really strong intuitive. You get this, someone says they're okay, and you're like, they're not okay.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I know people
how are you doing? I'm fine. You know? And you're like, you're not fine. Like, you know, we have like, that's your intuition. I actually have spent a lot of time working with CEOs and executives of super high level companies, teaching them intuition. And a lot of them use a combination of like the logical mind and the intuitive mind when it comes to decision making, you know. And if you don't include, you can go too far into the intuition and leave behind the logic, which is not a good idea. Yeah, let's not do that. We don't want to drop our common sense along the way, you know, but the combination of those things when they're in harmony, like so many high level execs use intuition. I've done intuitive and psychic work for stockbrokers on what stocks to pick. Like, you'd be surprised, you know, how deep this goes. Nancy Reagan had a full-time astrologer that she worked with, you know, and she just didn't make a move without talking to her astrologer.
Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results are in. I found out my biological age, which directly predicts my risk for serious diseases. Here's why that matters. Research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. The good news is, nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hand. Yes, it's driven by things like your lifestyle, which means you have a lot of control over it. I was pleased to see my biological age was 6 years younger than my chronological age. That felt like a big win because I've definitely put a lot of time and attention on improving my lifestyle habits so they are more aligned with my health goals. The test also showed a few areas to work on and even pointed out a low level of riboflavin or vitamin B2, which plays a huge role in energy metabolism. It's strange because I felt there was something inhibiting my energy, and now I have a simple theory I can test. The True Age test didn't just give me a number, it showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, no doctor visit or big needles, just a quick, painless finger prick. You send off that tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code MINDFUL to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use code MINDFUL at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. It's springtime here, which means it's mattress season. And mattresses are sprouting up everywhere I look outside. I'm kidding, of course, but if Mother Earth did grow mattresses on trees, she would grow avocado green mattresses, as they use sustainably sourced organic natural materials. As the season also brings the warm weather with it, I'm quickly reminded how important temperature is to our sleep quality. Staying cool overnight makes a big difference, and organic natural bedding sleeps cooler than the cheaper synthetic alternatives. For those who thought avocado only makes mattresses, they also make the most luxuriously soft bedding to keep you cool and comfy while catching those restful Z's. Whether you are looking for organic cotton, natural linen, down, or even silk, Avocado Mattress has everything you would want to upgrade your sleeping environment. Investing in better sleep always pays off. Head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better.
It's funny you say that. I work in a gym, and I had a client years ago, and it was a long-term client I had was working with for maybe, I don't know, close to a decade. And he was an older man, and he was extremely successful, like one of the most successful, financially successful, business successful people that I've ever personally worked with. And he had a psychic on retainer in California, and I thought it was like the weirdest, craziest, honestly, like dumbest thing. Yeah. But it was really useful to him.
Yep. And you'd be surprised how many super successful people have that psychic on retainer. And I have been that psychic on retainer for some of them, you know. So this is not something that's totally into the woo-woo. Like, I mean, it is, you know, in some ways there's if you want to go down the woo-woo rabbit hole, you totally can. But a lot of people just use this because it's practical.
Yeah, in the session I had with you, it was, I mean, I found it was like a coaching session. Mm-hmm. It was a coaching session where It seemed like you were trying to tune into me and just listen to, like, maybe the deeper message of, like, the issue I was working with on the surface. And, yeah. What's beneath this? Where does it stem from? Brought up, like, some childhood events that are essentially maybe being triggered is a word, where they're, like, being triggered, where my body's response to the stresses of childhood reoccur when I'm dealing with somebody now that was involved with those childhood things, like a parental, which,
yeah,
you know, logically makes sense. And a lot of people discuss, you know, inner child work or trauma work in those regards. But that's kind of how I felt. I felt like you were just really in tune with those connections, and then
yeah.
kind of holding a mirror up to me at the right angle, at the right distance, so I could see it and then acknowledge it. And I don't want to say work through it, but like try to like incorporate that framework into how I'm showing up today and how I might inform my decisions going forward, with knowing that, oh, this is this part of you that is like reacting, you know, this,
mm-hmm.
this child part of you is reacting to this event.
Yeah.
And I found it to be very, very useful.
So glad. Yeah. So my training is, so when I started working as a psychic when I was 19, it was in the 80s. And I quickly learned I really needed more skill in dealing with people. So when I finished university, I went back to school and became a therapist. Right. So I combine a lot of therapy in my coaching, therapy in my sessions. And I think, and then I learned Reiki and added energy work into the mix 26 years ago. And I think my talent as a psychic is to look at people sort of on the level of the soul. Like, who are you at your deepest level? Your potential, your life purpose, your mission here. What is amazing about you? What's blocking you from reaching that full potential? You know, what's been going on in your past lives? What's the patterns you're working through, or the narrative of your soul's evolution? Then, you know, I said, like, in the beginning, every psychic works in a different way. That's just how I work. So my goal is always to see the fullness of you, like, you know, and try to help you get there.
You just alluded to the idea of past lives. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more? Like, do you think everybody is just mm-hmm. coming from one life form to another?
I don't think it's from one life form to another. I think we stick in our same life form, but I don't see people like you're a human this lifetime and a rock the next lifetime and a deer the life after that. Like, I think we stay in the same track. But I do see people's past lives all the time and have my whole life. So to me, it seems, I know not everybody believes in the idea of reincarnation, but I certainly do. And I do because of my own experiences of, you know, when we have been, like, I like to travel and I've been to places where I'm like, I know I've been here before, but I've never been here before, you know, or we have like a certain ease of things, like you pick up languages, you pick up this language like that, or you don't know why you know how to play the piano, but you do. Like, it's, you sit down and play, you know, like sometimes we carry forward gifts from our lives. We also carry forward the burdens, like the unhealed parts, you know. I was, thank God, like, can you imagine if we had to get it all right in one lifetime?
Interesting perspective.
You know, like all the things, you know, it's all research. We're just sort of, you know, we have another go at, I think about my kids and my life as a mother. I'm like, thank God I'm going to get another chance, you know, like another opportunity to do. I hope I get the same kids. I'm going to do better next time. I swear, kiddos, you know, but I think when we have traumas or things that happen, we don't fully process in this life. We carry that forward into another lifetime to work at it. And to me, I find that a comforting thought because.
But is that within, like, you know, the bloodline? Like, I know there's
epigenetic stresses
that get passed down and information gets passed down. They've done some interesting experiments on that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
but do you mean like outside of that, where you could have existed, even if you were like in the human line, you were totally somewhere else, totally right. Different time frame.
Yes. Yeah, sometimes we incarnate along our own ancestral line, but most of the time we don't, you know? So you might have had your very first lifetime, you know, in the Ice Age and you were a caveman, or you were, you know, you first incarnated into the tribal world. A lot of us start our incarnational cycle in sort of the prehistoric times when we were tribal. And then as your soul grows and evolves, you know, you're choosing, we have sort of threads or themes that we're working through that will give you sort of a commonality of theme, but you know, we're often interchanging like our gender. So you're not always a man. You know, I'm not always a woman. You might have had lifetimes as a woman just to experience what that's like, you know?
Can you give some, without, you know, violating, I don't know, like client, practitioner rules or whatever. I mean, can you give some examples of how somebody was somebody else previously, or
sure,
and yeah, like I just how worked they with discover a, that, or
I worked with a client not too long ago, a couple weeks ago, who was having a real trouble with their partner. So it was a woman. My client's a woman. Her boyfriend. It was a really tricky relationship. So she came in and she's like, "It's really dysfunctional. I don't really know why. I feel like there's something to learn, but I'm not clearly learning it." So I could feel it was a past life thing, and I could see that in her previous life, she had been this person's mother. So she was the mother and her partner was a child. And the child had died, I think, from an accident that she felt really responsible for. You know, it looked like a drowning death to me. She had felt like she could have prevented that. And so she carried this huge guilt. And she's like, "Oh my God, this is like how it is now. Like, I feel like I'm the mother of this. Even though he's a grown-up adult, I feel like I'm responsible for him. I feel like I'm his mother. He won't grow up. He's, you know, blames me for everything. I feel guilty for everything." It was a pretty dysfunctional relationship, but a really good opportunity for her to learn. So, you know, we talked about how we can't ever be, it was like codependency, you know, a lot. And I'm like, well, you can't ever be responsible for somebody else. Like, that person needs to deal with the consequences of his own actions. You can't save him or fix him. He's got to figure it out himself. And once she saw that, it completely shifted the dynamic in the relationship. And she stopped mothering him, and she stopped feeling guilty for all of his choices that he was making. And it gave him the freedom to, you know, grow up a little bit and take responsibility for his own life. And I don't know what will happen in that relationship, but it certainly changed. Knowing that piece of information explained it and gave her like a framework for making different choices, gotcha. More empowered choices.
How else, what are other common ways that people can benefit or utilize this process in like their, you know, like their realistic day-to-day life to help them navigate?
Do you mean in studying to be a psychic or going to a psychic?
Yes, either way.
Both, either way. I think that a lot of times, well, people come to a psychic because we're at a crossroads. You're at a crossroads. There's some big decision you've got to make. You're, you know, at a crossroads in your relationship, your career. Maybe you've got to move somewhere and you want to like, you want to access some higher wisdom. Like what, and as a psychic, I don't do like really predictions so much because I only see the future in terms of probabilities or possibilities. I really believe in free will. So I'm like, you got to choose. I can tell you what I think it's going to be like if you choose A, B, or C, but ultimately the choice is up to you. So sometimes it's really helpful to see that. Sometimes people come when they're in the middle of a big crisis, they've lost somebody, somebody passed away, or they're going through a divorce. There's like a lot of, you know, transitions that we go through in life. And it's really helpful to talk to a psychic or spiritual counselor during that time. Or if you feel really stuck in your life, like, I don't know how to move forward. I can't get out of my own way. I've been like, I hate my life, but I don't know what to do to change it. You know, those are mostly the clients that I get and the ones that are having spiritual psychic openings and need help.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then I think like if you want to like some really simple things, it's not complicated. I think we need to make time in our life to listen to our own intuition. And we're so busy. We live in such a noisy world. We need a little quiet space. Like, don't we always have the radio on, a podcast on, the TV on? Like, we're always hustling, doing two things at the same time. So if you want to increase your own intuition, first of all, make some quiet time. And I like to, it doesn't have to be, I mean, great if you can meditate, but if you're not a meditator, you don't have time for that. Just turn off the noise while you're washing the dishes. Go for a quiet walk. Like, go walk the dog, but don't put on a, you know, whatever you're listening to, music, podcast, of course, except for this podcast, obviously, right? but, you know, quiet time is real. We need time where there's no noise in our head to sort of tune into our deeper self. I love the idea of the psychic journal, and I just get a journal, you know, write psychic journal on the top of it and start writing down your experience. You're recording your dreams. Every time you see that 726, write it down. You know, when things happen, when you get, if you pull oracle cards, if you feel a strong intuitive hit when you meet somebody, start recording it. Because a lot of times these experiences are very ephemeral. They seem like significant in the moment, and 5 minutes later, you forgot about it. You know, you just moved on with your life. So recording it is a good way, paying attention and tracking it is a good way to strengthen it. And I love this exercise. Here's an exercise anyone can do. Write a question down in your psychic journal. And if you don't know what, if you don't have a question, just write, what do I need to know right now? Then wash the dishes, take a shower, walk the dog, mow the lawn, fold the laundry, quiet. And those kind of activities put you in the alpha state, the alpha brainwave. That's the most intuitive, creative brainwave we get into. And then pay attention to what you think, what you feel, what, you know, what little movies you see cross your mind, you know, what you know, like you might have an aha moment, like, oh, that's the answer to my question. Or you might just have a, you know, a sense of knowing or a feeling, and then write it down in your journal. That is way everyone driving. Just, you can do it in the car. Driving puts you in an alpha state.
Does it?
Especially if you're driving somewhere, you drive like commuting some, you know, like if you drive the same route every day, right. You're like, how did I get here? Yeah. Like what? I got here? You know, like that. Those activities put us into the most psychic state we go into.
Yeah, there is definitely something to be said for slowing down, getting quiet, and paying attention. This is called the mindful movement. I mean, if I was to just define what mindfulness is, it's just paying attention.
Yeah.
What is going on? It's like the act of observation. So, yeah, it's funny because I was got in the habit. I love walking, and I have a little piece of nature out back, and that's like a little meditative process for me where I do kind of get questions answered that are like underneath, that are like ready to be solved, little mental, emotional puzzles that, you know, we all have at any given time. You're probably juggling a few. But mm-hmm. I was in the habit of just, because I love enjoying content. Like, I love learning. There's always something to learn about. I'm always like mm-hmm. binging on some type of content. And then when I'm not, mm-hmm. it's like, I want to listen to music. And mm-hmm. you lose something from it.
Yeah.
You lose something from it. Like, there's something about having that stillness of the mind where it's not following mm-hmm. something. Yeah. And it makes space for the inside stuff to come up.
That's right. I'm the same. I love a podcast. I love a book on tape or music or, you know. So it's our brains like to be entertained and, you know, stimulated all the time. And we lose something if we don't have some quiet space.
Yeah, it likes to be entertained. It's also, for some people, terrified of the stillness of what might come up.
Yeah, you might have some feelings. You might have some emotions. You might have some thoughts that challenge you. You might remember some stuff. It might be painful.
It's funny.
You might cry.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been doing that a little bit. I've had some emotional stuff come up lately, mostly I think around transitioning to empty nesting and kids being gone and all the emotions that are around that, like, are they going to be okay? Did I do enough? Did I do a good enough job? Am I enough? Whatever it all boils down to. And,
yeah.
And I remember I was on a walk recently, and it was right after my son, who's moved away, and he's far away now. He was back visiting for a little bit before he went away again for a long time. And I went for a walk, and I knew I was struggling, but I didn't really, like, it's not like I had this process. I'm going to do this to process this struggle or these emotions. I just get out there, and I went on his, when he's home, he had this habit, especially the last couple of years he was here, to go on this certain hike towards this reservoir, this body of water that's about a half mile from the house. So I went on his walk, like, not to, like, I don't know, honor him, just like, I don't know, it's almost like to be with him. I go, you know, follow his footsteps on this trail that he always trailed. And then I got there at about the halfway point, starts raining. Like, legit raining, not a drizzle. So I'm, you know, I got 10, 15 minutes of walk ahead of me to get back home, and I'm getting drenched. And it's like exactly what I needed. And I just matched the rain, you know, and just like, this is what I need. Like, this is the release I needed to get through this tough stuff. I just needed to, like, cry it out a little bit. And it wasn't like active crying, like I'm crying. It's almost like my body's just being cried. You know, I'm just walking, and like, I'm not making cry noises or whatever. It's just, there are tears coming out, and it's like, I'm just letting my body do what it needed to do. 'Cause I'm like sad over him being gone and a little lost of like, what do I do now? My youngest is out. Like, I'm not needed. My all so much self-worth that I probably like have for myself is around the job of like taking care of them for all these years. And now without that job, that sense of identity of that role is like gone. And it's like, well, who am I now?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Yeah. My daughter's moving out next week.
I wish you luck. And
thank
her.
You. Yeah, it's a good thing, but I totally feel what you're talking about. And and I love that you were able to let yourself have your feelings and, you know, let that wave of emotional energy move through you, because it does move through like a wave, you know. Yeah. And then on the other end of it, you know, we process the emotion. And I think I always say we need 15 minutes of feeling time every day.
Yeah, that's a good strategy.
Maybe it's in your journal, you're writing down your feelings, and or maybe I like tapping. I like EFT. So I do something called tap and rant. You know, it's like, I often do it while I'm driving.
So wait, when you say rant, I've heard of the EFT. I've done that a little bit back in the day. I went to like a workshop where somebody was teaching it.
Yep.
When you say rant, are you babbling like that, or are you actually trying to say
I'm
things?
Saying stuff, okay, you know, I'm like, I'm so sad my daughter's leaving, and you know, la la la. Yeah, like it's all, I just get it out.
There's something to be said with getting out. I mean,
yeah,
you know, I don't journal much. I did a phase a little bit. My handwriting sucks. I don't even know if I'd be able to read it, but it's like you need some avenue to just get it from the inside to the outside.
Mm-hmm. So and you're not voicing it is really good. Yeah. Like whether you're speaking it out loud or you're writing it in your journal or you're just letting the energy move through you like you did, you know, like I think we all need 15 minutes of feeling time every day, you know, just to sort of process the emotions that we just get on the daily. And if we don't do that, they get all blocked up, you know, they get all plugged up and then our energy system is blocked and we hold them in our body and that creates like physical problems later on down the road and, you know, pain and physical, you know, illnesses and diseases. So we need it just as humans. We need quiet time and we need 15 minutes of feeling time.
Yeah, it's interesting. That very walk that I was just referencing, I bet if I had a podcast in my ear, it wouldn't have happened. You know, there's just, you have to make space. Right. And it is hard. Right. It's funny, in the gym, I would work with people and I would always start each session with like just a couple minutes of breathing, because they're like coming in from work or busy days. And it's like just, we're going to do plenty of work here, but like, let's start off by unworking and just like resetting the baseline. And for some people, especially people that are like really productive, I don't know if you call it type A's or whatever. But like they couldn't. It's like the hardest part. Like just two minutes. Like they're fidgeting. They just can't do it. Are we done yet? They're like talking. Like it'll start when you stop talking. like 2 minutes of quiet time. And for some people, it's the hardest thing to do. And I wonder how much of that is like maybe they're subconscious. Like maybe they're just not ready. Like they're legitimately not ready for what will come up if you're quiet and you make space.
Right. Or who knows like what they're, what they were taught about their feelings. Like if somebody punished you when you were little for having feelings or, you know, like don't cry or I'm going to really give you something to cry about. Right. Like, you know, like how many of us grew up with that, especially in our generation. So I think it depends on how, like, what your family rules were about feelings. Like my mother was a therapist and my parents were hippies. So my like loose, and my mother was French. So there was more like dealing space, gotcha. You know, but some people don't have that at all.
As a whole, that's probably improving on a societal level. And in some places, it probably goes too far where it's like, don't let anybody, a kid, have a bad feeling.
Right.
You know, God forbid they would feel something that wasn't pleasant. And that has its own, you know, the pendulum could swing too far.
Totally. Yeah. So emotional literacy, emotional intelligence is really a big part of, I think, the healing process. And as a Reiki healer, you know, and a counselor, people just sit in my chair and they cry. They're like, I'm so sorry. I just met you 2 minutes ago, but I'm crying. You know, I don't even know you, but I'm falling, you know. And I'm like, good, let it, get it out. Better out than in. And I don't think that so many of us have anyone that really listens to how we feel, or I hate to say cares about how we feel, but sometimes it's true. You know, like we don't have a space, a safe space where we allow, we can be seen and heard and have our feelings, thoughts, experiences honored, validated, you know, cared about.
Right. Well, I find that you radiate a very inviting energy to make people, at least myself, feel very comfortable talking about very personal things. So I do think you have a natural ability, and I applaud you for honing that skill for so long.
Thank you.
It seems like you're
thank you.
Trying to make the world a better place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, it's always about, and this is what I do when I train healers, that you can only go as deep with your clients as you've been in yourself. So it's the healer that does the most inner work that has a line of clients out the door.
Gotcha. You know? And if people want to do that work, where do they go? What are you offering?
My website, lisacampion.com, is where it's all happening. So I have a variety of classes. I teach psychic Reiki online. I teach psychic development from beginner, intermediate, advanced, and if you want to go pro. I have a year-long program where I teach people to be professional psychic healers like I am. And you can find out all of that on my website. I also have a YouTube channel that has a lot of free content and guided meditations and mini classes and things like that too.
Great. Well, Lisa, I want to be respectful of your time. I know you had a hard stop here. I could go on a little bit longer, but we'll save it for round two one day
when
our paths cross
so.
Again. I appreciate you guys reaching out. It's been a pleasure meeting you and working with you, and I've enjoyed this conversation. And for the listeners, always grateful for your listening. I hope you enjoyed it, and I encourage you to check out Lisa's webpage and see what's there for you. You know, see where it takes you, and discover more of yourself along the way. Tap into whatever this is. Lisa, thanks again.
Thank you so much, Les.